Good evening. Welcome to the Salary Report. Today is Thursday, May 3rd, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is returning from Portugal. I just returned after 10 days in Portugal, and rarely have I had a trip that was this informative and rejuvenating. I arrived on the 21st of April and had a weekend of discussion about the European situation with a group that had gathered various friends and colleagues from Portugal, Switzerland, and Germany. And Portugal is a very beautiful country, and the people are pretty wonderful. So a very interesting first 2 days. Then I spent Monday, the first business day, with a company that Celine, my investment advisory company, owns, and spent another day following, visiting their operations around Lisbon. It was very impressive management and plans. They're fighting the same kind of short selling we saw in the mining stocks. Well, we're probably still seeing it in the mining stocks, but it was pretty fierce in 2005 when, right before I left for Portugal, Bloomberg published a chart of the day showing that the market capitalization of Apple had essentially reached the total market capitalization of publicly traded stocks in Spain, Portugal, and Greece, which is, to me, ridiculous, but it shows you the extent of the sort of the beatdown going on in Europe. The number of banks with expensive storefronts in Lisbon absolutely boggled the mind. How could any place possibly afford this many banks? And how could these banks possibly afford this much real estate? The answer is they can't. I then left Lisbon and went south with friends to a water symposium in Tamara. There were 22 countries represented, incredible water experts from all over the world, including the top ones from Austria, India, and an amazing group from Slovakia, of all places. There's a great German expert on small footprint technology who was there. Tamara is a community that is prototyping restoring the land with lakes with the help of Sepp Holzer, who's a world-famous permaculturalist from Austria. And then Jürgen Kleinwachter has a technology lab that's prototyping doing small footprint technology, solar, water, both power systems and engines. And the group was really focused on issues of fundamental and real productivity, restoring the land, rebuilding soil, growing fresh food and other agricultural products, using renewable energy, and finding ways of living together in a positive way. You can, if you're interested, you can find the symposium brochure posted on the blog. It's maybe down off the homepage, but if you just keep following the commentaries, it's there. Or if you do a search for Tamara, T-M-E-R-A, you'll find it. What was surprising to me when I posted it is how much response I got from subscribers and readers and clients on how interested people are in water. And I think particularly as we experience these weird weather patterns, droughts in different parts of the world, we're finally beginning to understand how essential aligning ourselves in the land with water and using water well is important. I learned a lot at the symposium about how to communicate issues of economic and financial models. There's not a lot of clarity about what's happening, what the current models are and what models might work and why. And it's always been a challenge for me to try and help a group reach clarity about those issues, just because in a lot of the groups that I go to who are interested in this, there's not a lot of literacy on economic and financial models. Anyway, so I learned a lot from the group gathered that's helping me, that I think will help me write the book that I've been writing and hope to have done by the end of the summer. The unemployment in Europe is clearly very, very significant. I was in Portugal, not Spain, but it's reported that real unemployment in Spain is as much as 50% among the young people. The government reengineering the debt is simply shifting resources up from the social safety net and from people up into the banks. There's clearly a giant sucking sound upwards. Unemployment and austerity is simply transferring resources to the banking system for fraudulently induced paper that was not invested in things that were productive. in many cases. And so as a result, the productive part of the economy is being destroyed. To see the what the euro zone rules have done to really take productive land in southern Portugal and convert it to, you know, something approaching desert is frightening to watch. And the sort of waste of very, very talented young people equally. There was a great team of young people from Lisbon who were working on building new media and some very creative and amazing farmers. It inspired me to want to get all this creative small farmers to get together globally because they're what an amazing group of people. This kind of consolidation is destroying wealth, and unfortunately it's destroying the very wealth you need to pay off the debt. So if you keep increasing the debt and destroying the wealth you need to pay off the debt, you can only go to three places ultimately. And this is exactly what I said in 1994 that got my journey started, my Popsicle Index journey started. One is depopulation and greater poverty. Another is introducing new technology, including technology that's been suppressed. We talk a lot about that on the Solari Report. And third is to change the financial and economic model to get off the central banking warfare model and prototype new models that can sort of rebalance the global economy in a wealth-building way. Most of the people I met from throughout Europe, they were from Europe, the Middle East, Asia, a few people from Africa. They're clear that the current model is systematically destroying wealth. They don't understand why, and they're interested in finding new models, which is what the focus was on. And clearly rebuilding the soil and aligning water with the land is at the heart of anything that's wealth building. Money and markets. The European situation is clearly at the top of the list of anybody looking at money and markets this week. We have elections in Europe, a presidential runoff in France, which is expected to go for against the incumbent and for what's defined as a socialist, although one of my partners said to me this week, do you think France will become socialist? I think it's been kind of that way for a long time. Important contests in Germany, Italy, Greece, and Serbia, and I think austerity itself would be put to the test this weekend, and so next week should be very interesting to see what the repercussions are. Again, you can't, if you just keep loading up more debt and doing it in a way that destroys the wealth you need to pay off the debt, it can't go anyplace good. So the question is, are we gonna deal with real solutions or not? There's a very interesting video I put up on the blog of Hugh Hendry, a hedge fund manager from the UK who I have a high opinion of, and he has some very interesting comments on the European situation. He gets very frustrated with people not facing the reality and is very forthright, so it's always intriguing to listen to. What we're seeing back domestically and in Europe is more pain in the pension funds. On top of all the other problems they've had, we see the drop in interest rates really cutting into their yields. The Ford Pension Fund, and this is not a good sign, is offering lump sum payments to non-union members, but it clearly shows the pressure and is an indication of more things to come. CalPERS published a sustainability report. Given all the real problems facing the pension funds and all the, sort of the unanswered questions of CalPERS behavior over the last 10 years, financing the housing bubble and Lord knows what else, putting out such a report is just, it just makes you want to crawl under the table. We have KKR and the greening of private equity. I mean, it's just the most hypocritical, wasteful document. It just makes you want to cry. But it's, I linked to it up on the blog because everybody should see why some of these things are simply distractions. Speaking of major governance issues, Vanity Fair has a very interesting article. It's called World War 3.0. It's up on the blog. I recommend it, and it's about the meetings coming up at the end of this year to recraft the international governance system for the Internet and the pressure to rebalance that control out of America. And I think it's a very, very important issue. and one we're starting to think about now as the all the different squabbles, both domestically and internationally, about how we're going to govern the internet just increase in concern and tempo. You've heard me say for the last couple Solari reports this theme of American Renaissance fact or fiction. There was a new article in The Economist last week. I put it up on the blog. It's off the homepage now, but again, if you click back, you can find it. It's called The Third Industrial Revolution, and it's talking about all the advancements in manufacturing technology that could bring manufacturing back onshore in the first world. And in combination with what's been going on in energy policies, it really does seem to argue for what I'm calling an American Renaissance. Now, I think it's still too early to tell, but it's a very interesting article, and it discusses some of the new technology that's on the board or coming out and is having a dramatic impact from everything from 3D printers to robotics. Natural gas prices continue to drop. We're seeing articles now about the extent to which this is hurting the coal industry. I suspect we'll start seeing them about what this is doing to the potential for new nuclear power plants. If you have not read the transcript or listened to Jim Norman, our interview with Jim on the U.S. Plays the Oil Card, it was absolutely sensational. Jim's opinion, and I share it, is that the U.S. Ability to use new fracking technology to put enormous natural gas reserves sort of on the books could have a very dramatic impact on the U.S. competitive position over the next decade or more, and literally they can pull the rabbit out of the hat, and that's very important news for the dollar. It's one of the reasons in many communities water is going to be an even more important issue, because this kind of technology, drilling technology, needs a huge amount of water, and so more issues about water. There are many. One of the controversies around fracking is that it can damage the water, and you know, those knowledgeable about the technology argue that it's really quite safe. I would say the problem is that residents cannot trust the government, the regulators, or the corporations to make good in the places that it goes wrong. So there's a real issue of distrust, and if you're a property owner whose property is threatened with no way to make good, you can understand why people are quite up in arms about the whole thing. Financial Times reports on a Morgan Stanley study that on U.S. exchanges, non-computerized trades, both retail and institutional, are down to 16% of total buying volumes and 13% of selling volumes. That's 84% are computerized trading. Question is, will this push institutions more into the dark pools? I would suspect yes. I've said before that the U.S. presidential election this year will be extremely tense and could get quite dirty and mean. In that vein, I put up a trailer or a 16-minute short for a new video I just watched on Paul Wellstone's, they say, assassination. I suspect they're right. In fact, you know, before looking at it, I couldn't conceive that it was anything other than assassination, particularly if you saw the trading and defense contractors immediately after the plane crash was announced. But if you go through the evidence in the video, I suspect that they're probably right. But it just reminds you how serious these politics can get. And I think, again, I think this year is going to be quite an uncomfortable process. QE Watch, we've watched the stock market and commodities very much trade in tandem with the Federal Reserve and sort of the central bank liberalization policies, QE1, QE2, and then the latest Operation Twist. It ends in June. Will there be more? I think yes, if you're the central bank and you're trying to keep the market strong between now and the election. You don't want to wait until the fall to do this. You want to go in June. So I think whether it's overtly or covertly, the Fed will be looking to support with liberal monetary policy this this summer. Now, summer is never a good time for either equities or precious metals. There's the, you know, the old saying, sell in May and go away. However, this is an election year, but if you look at the fundamentals, it's not strong, so don't be surprised if we don't have strong markets for either equities or precious metals this this summer. We see Google management, top management, a variety of other very well-heeled entrepreneurs funding a plan to mine asteroids in space. I put the story up on the blog. You can see it there. It sounds stranger than it is. A great deal has been done to reposition the government and NASA's position in the space program to make it possible for corporations basically to take over space and the mining opportunities that space offers. If you look at the scientific advances that are coming, it's not surprising. It makes sense to invest in going into space, and I suspect there's been a significant amount of investment that has been quiet and through the black budget or off the books. So this is not as silly as it apparently looked to many people this week, and I suspect it's the beginning of a serious effort to take advantage of sort of the wealth that can come out of space. And given the issues of a growing population and peak everything here, it certainly makes sense. But don't be surprised to see just dazzling and frightening scientific advances announced and accelerated. I posted a whole series of different ones up on the blogs, you know, cell phones that look through walls and, you know, cloning of this and that. And I think we all just need to expect for that to accelerate. Under the category, if you can't make this stuff up, Monsanto bought the leading bee research firm, and you just want to put your head in your hands and go, ah. there's a great response from Foster and Kimberly Gamble, the producers of Thrive, to John Robbins and a group of progressives who criticized the movie. I put it up on the blog. It may be off the homepage at this point. We've been posting a lot. But it's really worth reading. And it's a very gracious illumination of some of the more suicidal behavior that goes on inside the progressive community. And speaking of getting jammed, Catherine got jammed while I was in Portugal. Right before I left for Portugal, the local energy authority, which, you know, and I thought this was 5 years away, showed up and tried to put a smart meter in, and I just said to the guy who showed up, oh, I'm in the opt-out program, and I called Bolivar Electric and tried to find an opt-out program. They said they didn't have one, so I said, can I talk to customer service? They promised me they would call me back. They didn't before I left, and while I was out, they showed up and told my office manager that they were going to turn off the electricity if they couldn't put the smart meter on. So now I have a smart meter on the house. Now the house is for sale, but anyway, so much for now. I have a surveillance device on my house. If you don't know about smart meters, you really need to, and you can do a search on the blog. We've done a lot of blog posts on smart meters and have a great Solaria report with Blake Levitt on the topic. Our hero this week is Sepp Holzer, the Austrian permaculturalist. His presentation at Tamera last week was just phenomenal, not just in terms of what he has accomplished or the ideas he put forward, but the integrity you could feel from him. This is an extraordinary man doing extraordinary work. There are going to be several opportunities to study with him in the U.S., and we put a post up on the blog so that you could check them out. One's in, I think, one or two are in Montana, and one is shortly in Detroit. Ask Catherine. Christy writes, Catherine, I understand your thoughts that there is no way. That being said, what are your thoughts on overseas investing and overseas bank accounts? Not looking to hide or do anything illegal, just looking to diversify a little more. To be a little more specific, someone has mentioned Uruguay might be a good place to open an overseas bank account. Any thoughts that you could share? Having never traveled outside of the U.S., I thought it might be wise to go there and see firsthand for myself, or would I be better served going somewhere else? Several points. Yes, I like the ideas of having funds in different places. So certainly, you know, North America is one place to have funds, but I like the ideas of having funds elsewhere. Please read the special report on foreign financial accounts. You can access it with the special reports both at your resource page or at the home page, because you need to understand some of the compliance issues of having foreign financial accounts. If you have foreign financial accounts, you want to be impeccable about your reporting. We did banking reports in the archives. They're a bit dated now on banking in Singapore, Canada, and New Zealand, which are some of the ones I'm more familiar with, along with Switzerland. I don't know Uruguay, so I can't say one way or another. Should you go meet them, you ask? And I say absolutely. I think it is essential to meet and know your bankers. And you may say that you're not a financially sophisticated person, but you can tell so much from walking into a place and talking to people. Believe it or not, in the bank intimate section on the Solari website, we have a document that, or a sort of a little checklist that says how to find a good local bank. Believe it or not, you can reapply that to a good global bank as well, how to find a good global bank. It's the same process and the same rules. So I recommend you take a look at it. But, yes, I think holding assets in a variety of different places makes a lot of sense. Just remember, though, that any financial institution globally, if the United States government says, thou shalt do the following with respect to any U.S. citizens, they will obey. So you will continue, whether you like it or not, to be under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government. Julian writes and says, about solar panels. Hi, Catherine. I have recently visited an American friend in the Ukraine who has a startup that is producing solar panels there. I learned quite a bit about solar panels, like how the prices of polysilicon has dropped so significantly in the past 2 years that made a lot of rich countries hitting the grid parity now. Right before I left, he told me that the World Bank has contacted them directly without them reaching out. They offer to loan starting at $10 million or up, but my friend's company only needs about $2 million or so. One thing that puzzled about the current energy development is current support in the mainstream for solar panels and wind powers. Like, how come the polysilicon dropped so quickly? Is it a Trojan horse? I wonder if you had any insight into this or had any past articles covering this topic. It's interesting. This has been a big topic with my investment partners as well as at the Tamera conference. That we're seeing the same thing happened in solar panels that we saw in integrated circuits, you know, Moore's Law, with a steady drop in prices. And it is getting to the point where countries with strong sun really are hitting grid parity. So places where the energy is expensive or places that have a lot of sun are approaching a point when solar becomes has much more potential than it's had. A big issue discussed last week at Tamera was, is a community better off with technology that they can build and operate themselves, or with cheap solar panels being made by a central corporate source? And I think one of the reasons that they've come down as much as they have is the pushes on to centrally control and keep communities dependent on central forces to get their next round of solar panels. So I think there's a real centralized versus decentralized technology battle going on, but tremendous resources are being put for a variety of reasons, not necessarily a Trojan horse, to bring the price of solar down. I suspect that could have happened long ago, but part is inspired by the incredible efforts, as Jim Norman has explained, to keep the oil price up. So it would not surprise me to see solar become much more economic steadily over the next couple of years. Okay, so that's it for questions in Ask Catherine. Let's turn to our presentation of the evening. And this is one that I am going to really enjoy. It's called Solari Report 101. And it's an introduction to the archives. We've been having lunches. I've had lunches now in Vienna and Kalispell and Tucson, Austin, San Jose. I tried to have one in Lisbon. And Cincinnati's coming up in June. We've had a lot of feedback and conversations from subscribers and feedback from customer service questions, emails. What I'm discovering is that a new subscriber finds a rich archive and doesn't quite know where to start because there's a lot of material. So my goal tonight is to walk you through the archive and all the resources that are available, so to give you ideas about what's most useful for you. The Saleri Report tagline is building personal and family wealth, and I want to organize it sort of around what that means. Our goal in the Saleri Report, my goal is that we will help our subscribers increase the equity on your balance sheet. Now, what do I mean by the equity on your balance sheet? I mean the value of all of your assets minus your liabilities. But there are some unique aspects to the Saleri approach about doing that, and let me just describe what they are. It's really four things. One is our definition of equity does not just include the traditional things that a CPA or an accountant would put on your balance sheet. So we're not just interested in your financial equity. We're interested in the living equity that ultimately is the source of your financial equity, your knowledge, your health, your family, your network. We believe in a very integrated approach to equity and aligning financial equity with living equity, because in the long run, they have to be aligned to really build true wealth. The second thing is we believe that the best way to build equity is in a way where we're all about the business of helping each other increase our equity. What's happening in the financial system is people are making money in a way that destroys the equity or the wealth of other people. So you have a win-lose model going on, even a lose-lose model. And we believe that if you play in a win-win way, that over time, if people know that and understand that, you will attract the highest quality people and players. Now, it's essential in that model that you're able to protect yourself from being drained by the people who play win-lose. And one of the things we spend a lot of time on the Saleri Report doing is helping you understand who those players may be and how to get them out of your life and every aspect of your balance sheet and income statement. But essentially, to me, the way to reinvent the financial system is one person and one family at a time. It's kind of the just do it method. So each of us acting this way gathers tremendous power. And in this environment, I am essentially more interested in you building power as building financial wealth, because without power, all your financial assets can be stolen and drained. So it's absolutely essential that we be building power and financial wealth that builds power. The third thing is that we look at the dark side of life much, much more than any investment advisors I know or people dealing with building financial assets. There's a real reluctance to look at the dark side for a variety of reasons. One is, you know, it can increase risk for the person bringing the illumination, but the other is I think that many investment advisors have not taken the time, and it's very time-consuming to sit down and really study and look at the dark side. So you have lots of websites who are railing on and on about the corruption, but they're often pushing a particular agenda or solution. You know, so many websites that have been promoting for years, oh, it's about to collapse, it's about to collapse, and of course Catherine says, no, it's not going to collapse, it's going to slow burn. And I think part of the reason I do that is I have a map that includes a much more detailed research and personal experience in understanding the dark side. Now, what's the advantage of looking at the dark side? The biggest advantage of looking at the dark side is the power of creating a new story. I had a wonderful subscriber as a dear friend who, after listening to Adam Trombley talk about entrainment technology and subliminal programming, which is about as dark as a subject as you can get, and then listening to Bill Tiller talk about the power of intention, and Adam Trombley again talking about free energy technology, she wrote me this lovely letter and said, oh, my God, I realized why things are stuck now because of, you know, all these dark things going on, the entrainment, the subliminal, the brainwashing. And then I realized, given what the power we have to basically impact our material reality through our intention and what we can do with new technology, I went to sleep, I had a dream, and I had a vision of what the world could be. And I understood what you were saying about how it is possible to create a world of just unbelievable abundance and health, you know, healthy living And she said, I get it now, I get it. And she said, no matter how bad things get, that picture for me is a vision of something very exciting that is worth not giving up on. And I think, you know, once you understand why things or how things have become so limited and limiting, by looking at the dark side, you understand the power of what could be on the positive side. And I think that is worth getting into. I also think it's worth getting into the dark side so that you know how to avoid it, because it's one of the greatest wasters of people's time and money is they don't know to avoid Madoff or how to make sure Madoff doesn't take everything. They don't know how to avoid Enron, so I think it's very, very important to understand the dark side so you can know how to avoid it. The fourth point, we believe in the long run that doing business with ethical, competent people pays. So, you know, oftentimes I get a call from somebody saying, oh, I think we can get a double in this stock. And I say, I don't care. I don't want anything to do with it. The people stink. So that's why we spend so much time screening people for the Solari report. And what you'll find is if you look at my time and the time of people helping as my production assistants, there's a tremendous amount of time vetting and getting to know people before you meet them on the Solari report. Now, what I'd like to do tonight is introduce you to the resources and the archive by walking through the balance sheet and income statement, because our goal is, as we walk through your balance sheet, to increase the assets in your balance sheet, reduce the liabilities and the risk, and increase the equity. And then, obviously, on your income statement, increase revenues or decrease expenses. And many of the different Solari reports that I'm going to talk about, some are cross-cutting. I could put them on your balance sheet. I could put them on your income statement. I'll only mention them once. But I wanted to do it in this context because I want you to see how everything flows back to this notion of helping you build equity. Okay, so let's go to your balance sheet and start looking at your assets. I describe, I break assets down between financial assets, tangible assets, intellectual assets, living assets, and spiritual assets. Financial assets, of course, that's my love, so that's where I'm going to start. First thing you need, you need a good bank. We had an audio seminar we did in 2005. I tend to focus in the Solari report on the deeper issues. And so it's surprising how many of these, so Where Would Jesus Bank, our first audio seminar on how to find a good local bank, was done in 2005. But in many respects, it's just as timely today, because when you focus on the deeper issues, they kind of don't change over time. Then we did a Solari report, in fact, with the chairman of my bank, who's also my very dear second cousin. It's called My Bank, How Do I Find a Great Local Bank? And some of the chairman and some of the top executives of National Bank of Malvern, which is a community bank in Pennsylvania, which is Solari's bank and my personal bank. And that's available, of course, in the archive. So first thing you need to do is find a good local bank that links to the bank intimate page, again, which I said has a checklist of sort of the steps to go through to find a good local bank. In the financial asset area, I would say if you could only watch one thing after sort of figuring out where to get a great bank, would be to watch the streaming video of the speech I did in Mill Valley last year called Investment Strategies for Changing Times. And it's an overview of the critical issues of approaching investment in this kind of environment, what your chief risks are, and how to think and deal with them. One of the biggest risks I focus on in Investment Strategies for Changing Times is debasement. And one of the challenges in understanding debasement is the extent to which the official statistics are manipulated. We did a great Solari report with John Williams of Shadow Stats. It's called The Real Deal on U.S. Economic Data. And I really recommend that one to you and John's work to you, because having good statistics on what's going on in the economy is very, very important, and very, very important to understanding the real debasement that we're managing and dealing with. I did a series of two special Solari reports last year, June 16th and June 23rd, called Unpacking Financial and investment advice, part one and part two. The first one I focused on financial advice. The second one I focused on investment advice. This was an effort to sort of sweep up everything I had learned about how to access and use financial investment advice well. And we have transcripts, but it's a if you are just approaching the challenge of how to become governor of your own assets and how to build assets, I think it's a great introduction to navigating a world where there's a lot of good stuff and there's a lot of not so good stuff. So unpacking financial and investment advice, that would be on the top of my list. For people who need great financial planning, we had, in December 2010, we had Charles Murray, who's president of the American Institute for Economic Research, do a presentation and interview called Organizing Your Financial and Legal Affairs. And at the time, Charles offered a discount. So if you go to their website and put in Solari, I think it's still good, you can get a discount on a lot of excellent financial planning tools, how to buy a car, all sorts of workbooks and basic information on basic financial and legal affairs for those who want to do it for themselves. In 2008, I published an audio seminar, and remember, when you are a subscriber, you get not only all the back Solari reports, but we have 17 audio seminars that we did before I started publishing the Solari report. It's called Positioning Your Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times, and it introduces one of the key portfolio strategy concepts I use, which is breaking your investments down into global and local and liquid and illiquid. And it walks through a before and after portfolio. So, you know, here's a portfolio that's highly vested in the corporate markets and sort of in the financial bubble. And then so that's the before. And then you see the after, and it goes through some of the key issues to think about if you're trying to reposition into something that is much more solid given the environment that we are now moving into. A very old one, but a good one, Navigate the Falling Dollar, was a speech I gave in 2004, so it's both audio and video. It's where I introduced my concept of the slow burn, which has really stood the test of time. And there's certain just basic things, themes that you'll see started in Navigate the Falling Dollar, repeated in Positioning Your Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times, and then moving into Investment Strategies for Changing Times. If you only have time for one, I would suggest Investment Strategies for Changing Times. Let me mention some more in the financial assets area. For those of you who are interested in socially responsible investing, I did an audio seminar in 2005 called Is Socially Responsible Investment Hazardous to Our Wealth? And it talks about some of the pros and cons of socially responsible investing, which I think for those who are interested in ethical investment, it's important to understand. One of the things our subscribers are very interested in is any potential changes in taxes, particularly in the provisions related to IRAs and 401ks. And we have written a special report about that. It's called Proposals for Annuitization of 401ks and IRAs. And we track that regularly, particularly in the precious metals market reports. So that's a theme running through a lot of the things that we do. But it's often discussed in the money and market section. Starting your own company is also, I would include, as an important category within financial assets. We started with a wonderful audio seminar called Building Real Wealth with Franklin Sanders, which I just can't recommend to you enough. It's a wonderful discussion of how to think about building real economies without government money and bubble money, and it's quite wonderful. And reflects the knowledge and experience of sort of a lifetime of trying to do really useful businesses. We also recently did one with Peter Island in September 2011 on startup financing for the rest of us. Peter has the best book on financing startups that I know of, and it's a great introduction to that resource. And if you're ever interested in starting up a business or someone you love is interested in, that really is a must-get book. It's the best I've ever found in the market. And then we followed up on March 15th this year with the Comfort Call Story, Organizing the Legal Structure for Your Startup, inspired by so many subscribers saying that they or their children were planning on starting companies. In that, we share a generic term sheet that we use to create the legal structure for a company called Comfort Calls, and it's in the Solari stock model of A share, B shares, where you can divide money or voting shares from non-voting shares and raise your capital in non-voting shares and basically keep control of the company. And so I think that discussion and that term sheet can save you a great deal of time in sitting down and figuring out a legal and capital structure for a new company. Fixed income markets, we tend not to focus too much on fixed income markets. We did do one on sovereign bond markets with Axel Merck, who's one of my favorite money managers in the fixed income space. I think he's very, very capable. And, of course, we just did municipal bonds with Joe Mizak, who's the top reporter in the municipal area. He works at Bloomberg. And then working as an investment advisor, I can tell you working in the markets takes a special kind of mentality. And we had, in February 2011, we had Stuart Thompson on the Bankster Mind. Stuart has a wonderful sense of the games that the market makers and the market riggers play, and I think he's got a marvelous newsletter. And that's one worth listening to if you're interested in the psychology of, you know, dealing with manipulated and rigged markets. We also have one on Derivatives 101, Engineering the Slow Burn, that I did in 2009 because occasionally we get subscribers who are very interested in understanding how derivatives work. We have gotten a lot of questions recently on coming out of MF Global on custodian issues, and so we're working on a special report, but that will probably be published by the end of this month or next month. So that's it for financial assets. There's more. Those are just the highlights. So there's a great deal of stuff there. Again, if I could only pick one thing to have you watch, it would be investment strategies for changing time, unless you have not found a good bank. And I just think that's so important to the health of your financial life. So if you haven't found a good bank, maybe you want to start with how to find a great local bank. Okay, let me move to tangible assets. We spend one Solari report every month, the second Thursday of every month, on precious metals. And as an investment advisor, my clients have tended to have fairly significant positions in precious metals. We're interested in every aspect of precious metals, whether it's physical or precious metals held in depositories or in ETFs. And that includes depositories and ETFs held in IRAs or just in straight non-tax-managed accounts. We did a special series because I think history is so important. Precious metals has played a critical role as sort of the keeper of accounts in the global economy between sovereign nations. And the politics around precious metals have been intense for centuries. It's not just something that happened recently. So I had Franklin do a series called The Top 10 Dates in the history, U.S. history of precious metals. And we packaged that as both an audio with a transcript. And I strongly recommend that one to you to get a sense of the history, particularly if you're going to be investing in precious metals and watching the geopolitics. So all of the Solari report precious metals are described in a special library. If you go to your resource page, you can click over to the precious metals report, and you can scan down and see all the different topics, and that can make it much easier for you to access the kind of information that you want. If you want a good introduction, the prices are out of date, but they're great introductions. We did two audio seminars in 2005, one investing in coins that Franklin and I did, and then one with James Turk investing in digital gold, and that's about gold money. We've also done a lot of special written Soleri reports on precious metals, many of them in response to your questions and concerns. One was on GLD and SLV, which are the big gold and silver ETFs. It's called Disclosure in the Precious Metals Puzzle Palace, and it's one of the most popular things that Carolyn Betts, my attorney, and I have ever written. A second one that was a follow-up, everybody said, okay, well, if I shouldn't be in GLD and SLV, obviously I should put gold and silver in a depository. Where do I go? So we wrote Options for Storing Precious Metals, and that's a great introduction if you want to understand what are the issues of, what are the different kinds of depositories, what are the different issues to think about in terms of using them, what are the fee questions, what is, you know, how do you judge integrity? And so it's a great primer if you're trying to learn about storing precious metals, particularly, sort of offshore. Finally, as precious metals rose in price, people were interested in trading the gold-silver ratio. We found more and more people with questions on the tax issues if they wanted to move or exchange precious metals, whether from gold or silver or silver to gold, or from an unallocated holding to an allocated holding, as people got more concerned about the integrity of holdings at different kinds of institutions. And that's a pretty significant and serious one. It's the kind of thing that you want to give to your CPA if you're considering a different kind of exchange or switch in precious metals. And I think it can save your CPA a great deal of time in digging out all of the relevant issues on that topic. And finally, we did another one on the arguably the strongest ETF from a credit standpoint, the Zurich Canton Bank's gold and silver ETFs. We've had James Turk on a couple times, and he came onto the Soleri Report in 2009 to give us sort of an update on gold and digital gold in the economy. We're working now. I have a special report that should probably come out not this month, but next month. It's called Precious Metals Still in a Primary Trend. And as precious metals have sort of not, we didn't get a strong year last year. Gold was up 8%. Silver was up or was down after a very strong year the year before. And clearly they've been sort of, trading in a channel, and they're weak right now. A lot of questions about do we believe that precious metals is still in a primary trend, which we do. And so I'm doing that to kind of organize all the issues and questions and answers in one major piece. So look for that sometime in the early summer. Energy, oil, and gas comes under the category of tangibles and commodities. We have done four Soleri reports with Jim Norman on the oil card, including the one we just did late last month. Oil and energy is a very significant player on both your balance sheet and income statement. It's a big expense. It's a big component of a lot of the things that hit your expense budget. So energy is very, very important. We've also had Chris Martinson come on to talk about his course, The Crash Course. Chris is a believer in peak oil. Clearly, Jim Norman and I are not. But I do agree with Chris on the concept of peak everything, and I think the Crash Course does a marvelous job of presenting that and helping us understand the importance of tangibles in the coming phase as the population continues to grow. One of the most important Soleri reports we ever did was with Adam Trombley. It's on Zero Point Energy, the publishing of Thrive. The documentary Thrive has gotten many people interested in knowing more on Zero Point. One of the reasons I wanted to do the Zero Point Energy is one of my greatest concerns as an investment advisor about oil and gas stocks and investments is if you believe, as I do, that the oil price is manipulated to a much greater price than the market price, and you also know that such technology as Zero Point exists, it's very hard to have a lot of confidence in a high oil price. And it's one of the things I watch very carefully, is there any risk that they could change the model out of a fossil fuel model? Because the minute they do, it's going to have a very dramatic impact, not just on the price of oil and gas, but on the price of everything. It's going to have a dramatic change in the economics of housing, a dramatic change in the economics of government, a dramatic change on the economics of transportation, just every aspect of life. And so where that politically drawn line is in terms of what technology is allowed in the model and what is kept out, that's a line that I watch very, very carefully. Finally, the ultimate tangible is your home and your land. We did an audio seminar in 2005 called Navigate the Housing Bubble, and the part one is the part I would recommend to you. It really goes into the extent of the collateral fraud and how the extraordinary mortgage fraud developed. The fraud we've dealt with in the last 5 or 6 years is not new. It's been building since right after World War II, believe it or not, and I tell the story. If you look at all the work we've done in the tangible asset category, whether it's precious metals or the oil card or the housing bubble, one of the things we've tried to help you do is to understand the extent of the what I call the collateral fraud or the naked short. In other words, the precious metals that everybody thinks they own is much greater than the actual precious metal sitting in the vault. Or the oil price is much higher than a market price would be, or the amount of mortgages outstanding are far greater than the number of houses, and on and on and on. And it's one of the reasons that the centralized system is remarkably fragile. And as Jim and I were talking about last week, they have to win. They can't afford to lose because the leverage in the system is so mind-boggling that they can't afford for it to unwind. And I think one of the things I've really tried to do is to help people understand that by going through the extraordinary manipulations in these three different tangible markets. And yet, I know when I talk to subscribers, they still have a hard time getting their mind around it. But I think if you're interested in that area and you sit down and you listen to, and I would add in that Chris Powell joined us recently on this Solera report to talk about the sort of the history of the evidence on suppression in the gold market. So if you go through what we've done on sort of suppressed technology, the manipulation in the housing market, the manipulation in the precious metals market and the oil markets, I think that will probably help you get your mind around it. Intellectual assets. Your mind, your data, your intellectual capital is how I divide this up. Your mind, if I could only pick one thing for you to listen to, it would be the interview we did with Adam Trombley on entrainment and subliminal programming and its relationship to financial manipulation. I strongly recommend that to you. The situation is far worse than most people know. But as my pastor once said, if we can face it, God can fix it. So I think it's very important for you to know that this technology exists and you need to protect yourself from it. We did a great interview with Dr. Nick Beckage on HARP. HARP has cross-cutting implications not just to the clarity of your mind and the electromagnetic field, but geopolitics as well. But I put it under the mind category since I think your having a clear and strong and healthy mind to me is absolutely essential to protecting and building your financial assets or any of your assets. So I tend to focus a lot of concern about, is your mind clear? Do you have a good map? I did an introduction in 2010, The Layman's Guide to Mind Control. Mind control is much more important to many things going on in stories than we think. Luckily, Hollywood's done a great job of documenting a lot of what's going on in mind control, particularly mind control used in covert operations. So there's a lot available now to make it easy for this area to understand, which is one that makes people squeamish. Then I've also included under your mind, but it's cross-cutting to many different areas, including your health and back to geopolitics. The series that we did on chemtrails, I did an introduction called Unanswered Questions About Chemtrails, and then after that, it was in 2010, we did a special report with Clifford Carnicom, certainly the very best expert on global spraying programs, a.k.a. chemtrails. And then before we did the special report with Clifford, we did one called More Questions About Chemtrails with Clifford Carnicom. And for the third and final big one, where he goes through all the hypotheses of what chemtrails may be about, we did a special transcript, and it's a remarkable interview and a great introduction. And I think if you don't understand chemtrails, it's very hard to get a good map of how our world is working right now and what's going on, although obviously there are more questions than facts available. Okay, so that's it for your mind. If there was any area I would encourage you to spend a lot of time on, it would be I would listen to everyone in this category. I really would. I think they're some of the best things we've done. Okay, your data. You've probably heard me say in a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. We did a great Solari report with Bob Sullivan on identity theft. I spent 2 years trying to figure out the best person in the country on identity theft. Finally chose one who'd worked for the Wall Street Journal. Right before she came on the Solari report, she got a job offer, had to suddenly ditch out on me, and then she said, well, after me, Bob Sullivan and MSNBC is the best, and so we got Bob. His books on identity theft are absolutely fantastic. His books on financial fraud are absolutely fantastic. Identity theft is something that is really a risk for every one of us, and so I encourage you to listen to that one. Then we had Catherine Albrecht in 2010, Are You Bringing Spy Chips Into Your Life? You and I are dealing, we are all dealing with extraordinary invasive data, and Catherine is a great explainer of that and all the different ways that spy chips come into our lives and sort of the data that we're giving up. And I think it's invaluable to understand these different invasive systems and shut them out as much as you can. We had, in response to subscribers' requests, we wrote two special reports on the census. The first was, what is the census? And then the second was, we got lots of requests to write something on what are the risks of not responding to the census. So we wrote quite a, I had Carolyn Betts, my attorney, write quite a tour de force on, you know, what are the enforcement risks if you don't answer the census. And those are both available as written special reports. You can access them from the resource page. Okay, in the category of, I would put this under your real deal map. So this obviously is a very long list, and I'm not going to go through, I'll go through it very quickly. If I could encourage you to read just one thing, I'd go back and read our wrap-ups. At the beginning of every year, we do a wrap-up and a look ahead, and it's a look at the big trends. We also do it quarterly, but I think the annuals, especially the ones that have great transcripts, the last 2 years have had great transcripts with lots of graphics. They're great overviews, and they really help you understand and look at the top trends. So I would absolutely read the annual wrap-ups, particularly for the last 2 years, and I think they can give you a sort of a great overview for your map. Some of the ones we've done in this area that would help is My Media. How do I know what's really going on? I had Alistair Thompson, publisher of Scoop Media New Zealand, one of my favorite journalists, just an incredible, incredible publisher, incredible media is Scoop Media. And that's really, you know, how to use the press to get the truth. I did one in response to many, many questions I got from subscribers. It was called Truth or Consequences. Is it possible to tell the truth without getting killed? So these are my formulas for how you can tell people what's really going on without, you know, getting too much, getting yourself killed. I think it's very helpful. I'm not a great believer in the collapse scenario, but I think it's very helpful to understand where collapses happened around the world and live through those sort of scenarios. It's great for planning. It's great to understand. Dmitry Orlov came on in 2009 for an interview called Can Collapse Happen Here? He thinks collapse is very likely to happen here. But I think his writings helps you understand tremendously about how to think about collapse and how to build resilient systems, which are good no matter what you do. One of the best Solari reports we ever did is September 2nd, 2010, The National Security State and the Class of Civilizations with Richard Dolan. Richard Dolan is the person who really promoted the notion of the breakaway civilization. And I think it's an extraordinary interview. We describe his second book on the national security state, and you know, that book is, if I had to give you a list of the top 20 books to read for the 21st century, that would be one of them. It's an extraordinary book, and just reading the first and last chapter, maybe 20 times, you'll learn more about what's really going on than just about any source. The current economic model is the central banking warfare model. I talk a lot about the importance of military and warfare to making the system go and making the economy and the reserve currency go. It's really America's core competency is war, and it's the basis of a lot of our economic blessings. At the same time, if you look at education in the United States, we don't do a lot of studying about war. We don't talk about war, and it's one of the reasons I did, in 2010, an interview with Dr. Victor Meyer from the University of Pennsylvania, who's published a new translation of Sun Tzu's Art of War. Talk to any spooky guy, it's their handbook. It's, you know, when I first got into the litigation, I can't tell you how many people who used to work for the CIA said, oh, well, you need to read Sun Tzu's Art of War. But it's a very interesting book, and it's a very important book if we're going to live in a global civilization defined by war, which is unfortunately what we're in right now. A great interview on the national security with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, used to work at the National Security Council. A very prescient one in 2010 by one of my favorite geopolitical commentators, John Laughlin, Will the Euro Fail? Interestingly enough, a lot of people want to learn economics, and my pastor once asked me to write a curriculum for his high school students. We made an audio seminar to describe it. It's called Economics 101 in 2005. Some other great, both Solari reports and audio seminars with John Rapoport, one of my favorite people to have on the Solari report. A great one with his latest product called The Matrix Revealed. We also just did one on Let's Go to the Movies, but we have an audio seminar called Introducing John Rapoport that's also very good. Finally, at the end of the last year, we had Peter Dale Scott on Deep Politics and The War Machine. His latest book, The War Machine, is very, very good, and a lot more insight into the relationship between war and the economy. Okay, moving on to living assets. Health and community is the two areas. We do a tremendous amount on health. One of my greatest concerns related to my clients' and subscribers' financial assets is that given the extent of the environmental pollution and given the extent of the deterioration in the food system and in the quality of water and air, we need to be thinking much more radically about investing in fresh food and in taking care of ourselves physically. So the amount of money that we should be spending on preventative health care is far greater than I think most people understand. I have people with very significant brokerage assets saying, oh, I can't afford, you know, fresh food. I can't afford to buy direct from the farmers. Or, you know, I can't afford that kind of preventative health care. You can't afford not to do that kind of preventative health care or get really, really high-quality food. So if you look at the food area, we've done a lot. We've had Sally Fallon on Nourishing Traditions. We had Scott Tips on Codex, which is literally the global scheme to control your food. We had Bertram Verhaag, who's done fabulous documentaries on GMO food. Dr. Gwen Scott on how to mitigate the harm to your health from chemtrails. Dr. Laura Thompson is my nutritionist, and she's been on several times talking about protecting yourself from vaccines or mitigating against radiation poisoning. She did right after Fukushima. We also had an attorney on to talk, Ellen Fields, to talk about how to access vaccine exemptions. A great Solari report with Dr. Robert Lustig. We did it in September 2010, Sugar Addiction, Getting It, Ending It. Absolutely fantastic. It was Lustig's work. After the litigation, I was addicted to sugar, and it was infuriating because I just couldn't break it. And then a wonderful subscriber whose doctor had studied with Lustig just kind of gave me the system, and boom, within a week, I was off of sugar. It was amazing. We did one with Eric Tonesmeyer called From Permaculture to Profits. Permaculture is, and some of the things going on in the whole organic and biodynamic food area are just very, very exciting. And so permaculture is a great interest of mine, and I think something that can offer lots of opportunity for people interested in gardening or landscaping. We also did one on building your local food IQ with Gene Hamilton from NOFA, great organic farming association up in Vermont. So, and finally, we have a great compendium of great food documentaries. You can print it out from the resource page. So let's go to community. One of my favorite Solari reports was one we did with Jay Hughes, who's an attorney who advises wealthy families. It's called Family Wealth, the same as the name of his book. And it talks about how families can get together and organize to help each other be successful. And it's a wonderful book. I recommend it to everyone. Jay wrote it to help wealthy families keep their wealth going for generations, but I'm a great believer that the tactics that keep wealthy families wealthy can help families that are not wealthy become wealthy. And it's a marvelous book, and it's a great interview. We also did one in 2009 called Nuts and Bolts of Organizing a Solari Circle, and we included documentation on how to do a Solari Circle that's an investment club, or a Solari Circle, or when I say investment club, I mean a traditional investment club using a brokerage account to do securities. But we also created a documentation if you wanted to do a Solari Circle to do local investment. And we spent a lot of time with my attorney making up those documents. And I think if you're interested in forming a Solari Circle to do investment club or a Solari Circle to do local investment, I think those documents will certainly help inspire you to do a conversation and come up with something with your own attorney and local people. Also under the category of community, Dr. William Tiller in November 2011, Scientific Support for the Power of Intention. I think Tiller's work is very, very important, and I would combine it with one we did in early 2012, this year with Lynn McTaggart, called Rethinking Intelligence. And Lynn is a reporter, investigative reporter, and remarkable author on the question of how does shared intelligence work. And both Tiller and McTaggart give you a very, very different picture on the power of humans to shift and change things in positive ways that is unbelievably, it's just unbelievably exciting and will really restore your confidence that we can change things. In December of last year, I had Foster Gamble, the publisher and producer of Thrive, and that was also a very inspiring, if you take Tiller and McTaggart and Gamble together, they were also very inspiring because Foster's last part of the documentary is very much on how do we achieve solutions, and now he and Kimberly are traveling the world engaging people in conversations on how do we really shift things, how do we start to move to a world where people can thrive. One a while back is Albert Bates on Financial Permaculture and Transition Towns. Another one I would put under community. Two more is Who's Your Sheriff with Sheriff Richard Mack, who really helped us understand the power of local enforcement. And I just think in terms of building community, understanding your local enforcement, working with your local enforcement, getting the right people in those positions can make just an enormous difference. And then finally, we talked to Jamie Johnson, who's a documentary filmmaker, who's made two wonderful films about the wealthy, and I called it Engaging America in a Real Conversation. And it's one of those, Jamie is just a very engaging, young, talented guy, and he's engaging the wealthy in one of the most blunt, honest conversations, and it really makes you realize, you know, we're not alone. There are people of great courage out there trying to do something. Okay, so let's move to spiritual assets. Spiritual assets, to me, get down to the questions of why are we here? How do we organize our time? And in a world gone mad, how do we get the energy and substance we need culturally and spiritually to really continue and make a difference? A couple that I would recommend to you, an audio seminar we did in 2005 called Getting Started with Coming Clean, and then a report, well, another audio seminar that I did with Franklin, because Franklin and I have lived through some pretty ugly experiences. It's one of the things we share. So we, during the time of Katrina, we made one called Building Your Lifeboats, Surviving and Thriving in Risky Times, and it was kind of our lessons learned from having to go through very hard times. I did one in 2010 called Catherine Reports Live from Switzerland, and a lot of it was about why I love the Swiss and what they can teach us about living through difficult times. Then finally, one of my favorite authors, Larry Gonzalez, author of a book called Deep Survival. That was a Solari report we did in 2009. It's just as relevant today. That is an outstanding book for anybody. I won't go into all the details, but it's really about people who survive extraordinarily difficult experiences and accidents in the wilderness. And Gonzalez distills it down to sort of 10 rules of thumb of what are the characteristics of people who succeed despite all odds. And believe it or not, it's absolutely transferable to any kind of difficult or stressful situation. And it's a very uplifting and exciting book. And so I recommend that interview to you because we go through sort of the 10 lessons. And finally, I just did a report called Living in Faith, and that's very recent. And that's where I sort of talk about what are the big issues that we need to face, because you can't, you know, if you look at what our problems are financially in this day and age, they relate more to lawlessness and corruption and sort of financial coup d'etat than they do to financial problems. And when you're dealing in a world that is that, where change is happening that rapidly and things are going on that are that both extraordinary and can be that negative for you, it's very, very important to come at things with a very powerful and strong faith and to sort of deal with the deeper issues, which is what I tried to do in that Solari report. Okay, so that's it for your balance sheet. We've gone through your different kinds of assets. And I'm not going to go through sort of what liabilities are, but it's really the assets that are going to drive your equity. Let's turn now to the to your income statement. And as I said, many of the things I've talked about in the balance sheet go into different parts of your revenues and your income statements. One of the things you'll see if you go through positioning your assets for growth in uncertain times or some of the other audios we did on finances is I talk about the importance of looking at revenues and expenses on an integrated basis. You'll find some people living a lifestyle where they're trying to increase their revenues, but in fact it means they have little time and their ways of reconfiguring their lives, moving out of high-cost areas, or simply decreasing the amount of time they spend trying to make money and using that time in a way to decrease their expenses and ending up in a situation where they can save more money and certainly be healthier. So you'll see that as a theme threaded throughout all the work we do is focus on what increases your equity, not just what increases your revenues. I would say that I do have a prejudice on entrepreneurial skills. So, and one of the things you'll see is successful entrepreneurs, to get to where they want to go, need to go through long periods where they operate at significantly decreased personal revenues. And so we tend to focus a lot, therefore, on what you can do to bring your expenses down, or certainly make sure you get what you pay for. The biggest waste I see in most people's income statement is not a financial expense, it's a loss of time, either because you continue to allow people into your life who play on a win-lose basis, or institutions into your life who play on a win-lose basis, or who invade your data and use your data in a variety of ways. So anything you can do to get those players out, whether they're, you know, bad dogs in your family or the wrong kind of big bank, but anything you can do to cleanse your life of dirty players or bad players or simply people who don't give you energy is one of the greatest wastes. A second is, believe it or not, stop watching TV. There's a great deal of time spent taking in misinformation from unreliable sources, and then having, you know, as a result of that, making a whole variety of mistakes. Food and water, I won't go back and go through everything I said about food, but it applies here. There is, if anything, more concentration that needs to be spent on accessing fresh food and water, and getting independent from corporate systems. And if you don't believe me, absolutely download that list of the top food documentaries and just start going through them. One of the things we focus on, again, in positioning your assets for growth in uncertain times and some of the other financial asset audio seminars and Solari reports, is how can you find ways of disintermediating your balance sheet so, in fact, you do more for yourself. So I'm always telling the story of the person whose yields were going down on her stocks and her water bill was going up, and so she sold her stocks and built a well. But anything you can do to permanently take over and create self-sufficiency and do for yourself is something not only that hopefully shrinks down in terms of your expenses, but then if we get a kick up in inflation or a decrease in reliability of the provision. So providing your own energy may look expensive until you realize if you head out to Portugal, they'll slap a smart meter on your house, and from then on you've got a surveillance device on your house that could harm your health. So let me just touch on the energy area. It was funny, I had somebody say to me when I first had Blake Levitt on the Solari report to talk about electromagnetic fields and then the smart grid, he said, you know, you guys are all over the map. I thought you were about financial assets. And I said to him, Jeff, if you look at your income statement, your utility bill is one of your biggest investments over a lifetime. And if you're paying a fortune to the utilities, when in fact the prices you're paying are way higher than they need to be, given, you know, what Adam Trombley is telling us about zero point, and in fact they're putting meters on your house which are surveillance devices and are bad for your health. So you're paying money, and instead of getting what you're supposed to be getting, you're getting something that's much more expensive than it needs to be, and it's invasive of your privacy, and it's hurting your health. You know, that is a financial issue. And so I would encourage you to take a look at sort of what's going on in both the energy and the food area that would argue for greater self-sufficiency. Taxes is obviously a very important part on your income statement, and it's why we've written this special report on foreign financial assets. It was the hot topic in this tax season. And it's one where the failure to be compliant could be very, very expensive. It's another reason why throughout the Solari report we continually pound the drum on the fact that there is no privacy and you need to be impeccable on your compliance and the taxes, or if you're not going to be impeccable, you need to do it with a clear understanding of the potential price of civil disobedience on this issue. One other one on the utilities, we had Dr. Sam Milham on dirty electricity. Are you paying your utility bill with your life? Very good one. Okay, so those are some of the additional things I would put on the expense side of the income statement. So this is the walk through the archives. There's a tremendous amount of material there, and I would hope that that you sort of go with this, or you access this in sort of the order that it's useful to you. If you have any questions at all about how to find what you're looking at, I would really encourage you to post questions, send them into customer service, or post them for this Solari report. We want to make sure that it's easy for you to find what you want and you find those pieces that are the most useful to you. There's a great deal here, but I think that if you take the time to go through this and access this material, it will give you remarkable context to understand how your world works, and remarkable instructions to help you understand how you can ultimately be the governor of your own financial resources, which is ultimately my goal, that you are the master of your ship, and your ship is getting wealthier and wealthier. So I hope that introduction is helpful. But again, if you have any questions, please let us know, and keep us posted on what additional materials you would love to have us cover, because there's no part of helping you build up your equity that we're not interested in doing, and we're not interested in providing. We'd love to give you everything that you think will help you get to where you want to go. Okay, that's it for this evening. In closing, coming up, let me tell you, next week we're going to have both precious metals and the first quarter wrap up with Franklin. I'll be over with him in Tennessee, and I'm really looking forward to it. And then the following week, we have John Rappaport and I doing our favorite documentaries. We did a special on our the sort of favorite movies to help you understand the real deal. This time we're going to do documentaries. Remember, our next lunch is in Cincinnati. You can just go to the subscriber resource page of the blog and click over to lunches and sign up if you're going to be in the Ohio area or Northern Kentucky at that time. So ladies and gentlemen, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.